Senior Focus. Kia ora tātou, welcome everyone. I'm Anne-Marie Currie, I'm your presenter for this edition of Senior Focus. And I have with me in the studio Catherine Simpson from the Public Trust. And she's here to discuss with me the concept of what is important about setting up your future and taking care of your needs when you're not going to be able to do it for yourself later. So that is the concept of an enduring power of attorney. So welcome, Catherine.
Kia ora. Thanks for having me.
And we'll kick off with the idea of why should you take charge of your future? Why is it really important? And I think there's no one better to ask than you, because this is your game.
Yeah, look, I think it's a really important question to be asking at all life stages, because we don't really know what the future holds. And so I'm currently in my 30s, my parents are in their 70s, and we constantly have the conversation as a family about what would happen if the unexpected happens. So recently, my father had dementia and he passed away, and I'm forever thankful that we thought about planning ahead of time as opposed to when that happened for him. So one of the things that really helps with planning for the future is what you've talked about, an enduring power of attorney. And that is, in essence, a permission slip that you give to someone else to make decisions on your behalf. So there's two types of enduring power of attorneys. There's one that we call a welfare, which is, in essence, someone that can make your medical decisions for you if you are no longer able to. So it might be that you have a serious injury. It might be that you have some kind of diagnosis, or you might have an early onset of dementia, and it gives someone the ability to work with you to make decisions about your health care. And then we talk about property enduring power of attorney. So a property enduring power of attorney is really around your assets and your kind of financial health. So they can pay bills on your behalf, they can sell and buy assets on your behalf, they can make sure that any money that's needed to look after your welfare is all taken into account. So I really encourage people to have both. My husband and I have both got property and welfare enduring power of attorney, and it just helps me sleep a little bit more soundly at night, knowing that if something happens that I'm not expecting, we've got our bases covered.
Yes, and I think although most of us don't expect to die young, or our partners, it's something that just can happen, and often it doesn't happen with much warning.
Yeah, we see some really interesting and beautiful stories through the work that we do. So recently we saw a couple where the husband had had a really bad car accident, and so he lost the ability to walk. The house that he owned with his wife wasn't wheelchair accessible, and so thankfully, because he had a power of attorney that he was able to invoke, his wife was able to sell their house and purchase a new house that had kind of appropriate access while he was in the hospital, because he was there for quite a long stay. Now, most people think if you've got joint assets, if you own that house with your wife, sure, she can go off and do that, but that's actually not true. You still need to be able to sign or bear witness to all of the paperwork that we know comes with selling a house or buying an asset. So it was really helpful to take a load off him that she could do that while he was, you know, resting up.
Yes, and these days banks increasingly are concerned about people's authority and identity and so on. So this actually takes care of a lot of that angst.
Yeah, we quite often have people say, we don't need a power of attorney because my family member will just go and get that sorted, or I'll tell the bank that this person can have access to my account. But unfortunately, the banks and your utility companies, so your Sky or your internet or otherwise, they need proof that someone can act on your behalf. That is your power of attorney document. It's what they'll ask you for. So it saves a lot of time and headaches for making sure you can get your bills paid, making sure that your electricity's still on, and all those sorts of things, to just have a power of attorney ready and not make any assumptions that somebody can step in and do those things for you.
And on that note, I think probably the next important question here is how do you actually go about choosing who should have this role for you? Because sometimes, you know, our best friends and best mates and the people we like to go and have coffee with and so on don't always make the best choices when it comes down to looking at property matters or looking at health care.
Yeah, it's probably one of the most important decisions that you'll make, and we always, you know, caution people to choose wisely. The characteristics I would be looking for, and I know when I named my attorneys, were what was top of my list. So you need someone over the age of 20. Ideally, you need someone that has got a little bit of longevity. So if you're thinking about, you might need to use this power of attorney in 5 or 10 years, someone who you think will be in a position to help you in that time frame. Ideally, someone who has never been bankrupt or had any major financial concerns, and obviously someone who doesn't currently have their own affairs being managed by someone else. So just making sure that they are currently able to handle their own affairs. And then I would be looking for, in a property attorney particularly, someone who is really good with numbers. Often we see people will nominate a family member who's also an accountant or also a solicitor or someone who is really comfortable, you know, running their own business. So they've got a real understanding of kind of assets, how to manage them, thinking about interest rates, thinking about how money might be invested. From a welfare perspective, it's often people who you trust to have really intimate knowledge of your health matters and that you know can navigate the health system. They kind of understand the jargon. They can ask the tricky questions. They're not going to back down if something isn't clear or something isn't necessarily the answer they think is in your best interest. But the most important thing, to be honest, is whoever you choose, have a conversation with them about what you actually want. Because what we see quite often is that people have an assumption about what's important to the person that they're the attorney for, but not necessarily any information from them about what they really wanted. And so, you know, choose wisely and give them a wish list of what's important to you so that they can be the best version of you when you can't make those decisions for yourself.
Well, that's very excellent advice, and I know it's made me think already about the importance of values, because the person we like or that we hang out with for coffee and so on, we will have some things in common, obviously, but we may have a values clash, we may have a cultural clash even at certain points over certain things. So then it becomes important not necessarily to say, oh, no, I wouldn't have that person just because of one thing, but it's important that you can spell out what your values are and how you want that person to act. Because if it was a situation where, for example, you needed a blood transfusion, they were going to approve that, but you had a personal belief where you didn't want to have a blood transfusion, you would have to make that really clear beforehand. Otherwise, if you're in a situation where you're not conscious, then they're going to go ahead, but they're going to feel conflicted about how they're carrying out your wishes.
We've had some really interesting examples where we often work on behalf of individuals who've named us as their power of attorney. So we can be an attorney at Public Trust for property only, not for welfare, for obvious reasons. And the thing for us is that we are often working with the values also of someone's welfare attorney. And so we had an interesting example a few weeks ago where the welfare attorney really wanted us to buy a piano for a customer that we were looking after. Music was really important to her well-being. She found joy and a lot of kind of spirit when she was in the presence of music, and she'd played for a long time as a child. And the welfare attorney felt really strongly. The family, however, thought that we should be spending money on more practical things like new furniture. She possibly needed some carpet replacing and things like that. So we often are navigating as an organisation the difference in values and the difference in perspective around what's important. So the more somebody knows who's making decisions for you about what it is that you wanted or what was important or what you would never have spent your money on in your kind of normal lifetime, then the more that they can make informed choices for you. And just having that conversation between the two attorneys that you nominate, if they're different people, is really important. Because if you have a conversation with your welfare attorney about what's important and not the person you want to look after your property, at some point one is probably going to need to help the other, and it's good that they're on the same page.
Well, it's also good that they actually know each other and meet each other. And I think that starting early is important in this game, because you might think, oh, well, 5 to 10 years from now, I can't even imagine what will be happening. But by starting early, you're actually able to connect up the people who are going to be around making the decisions, who are going to need to consult each other. Even if you just have a casual meeting with them once a year, you can do that and update them about what's happening in your life, what changes you've made recently, what you're planning to make over the next 2-3 years. And so they understand more how you think and what you prioritise. And they also get to have some sort of social contact with the other parties. So I say parties plural. Now, we haven't yet discussed the concept of backups or the concepts of how many people you might have involved. And we know there's two, one for property and one for health. But when we look at backups and so on, there are layers in this game. So maybe you could tell us about your concept.
Yeah, sure. So I'm a thrifty individual. I don't really like to spend money where I don't need to. So when I wrote my power of attorneys, what I did was I named successor attorneys for each of property and welfare. I had a bit of a long game in mind, in the sense that if something happens and my husband, who's my first attorney, isn't capable around, something has gone maybe not as planned, then I've got a successor attorney that's family, and then I've also got a second successor attorney. In the case of property, I actually nominated a public trust, because I had the view that I wrote my power of attorney at the age of 32, and I thought I might not pick it up again for a few years, and actually I wanted it to not have to update it and to spend the money to write it again. So I think it's really helpful to put in backups for both types of attorneys, and to think about who you might want to represent you at this point, but also thinking about 5-10 years down the track. Often the very wise people in our lives may not be in a position in 5 or 10 years to help, or they may opt out of helping because they've got other things on, or they don't feel like they've got the skill set to do what you ask. So nominate some backups. It saves you some time and some money along the way. But also do get the documents out of the drawer every few years. Have a look at them. Make sure you're still happy. Make sure people know what you're wanting and thinking about, or if anything's changed. And then if they're all good, put them back in the drawer. But if not, get in touch with someone, whether that be the public trust or another trusted professional, and just have a conversation.
Well, thank you. And I'm also aware that when you're wanting to save money, obviously if you get the health and property done at the same time, much of the document will be the same. So that will cut the cost. But there is a concept of having a mirror price that you mentioned, Catherine, and I wonder if you'd like to elaborate on that.
Yeah, sure. So when you come to Public Trust, we can offer spouses the opportunity to write their EPAs at the same time, which can often be a more cost-effective option for them because often they want fairly similar things. We also have the same opportunity when people write wills at the same time if they want to do one for them and their spouse. So we have a range of options. When people do their enduring power of attorney online, it's also a lower cost than if they come into a customer centre. And so you can go online and do an enduring power of attorney for $220 for one person, which I still appreciate is an expense, but it's definitely affordable on the range of options and costs for those type of documents.
And is that including GST?
Yeah, it's an inclusive price.
That's very good. I have heard prices ranging from $400 to $1,000. I mean, if you can do it online and do it for that price, that is a very good result. Just thinking also about health matters. Sometimes people are encouraged to do advanced care planning and do an advanced care planning document. Would you advise that and would you recommend that the enduring power of attorney be given that document as an appendix to their responsibilities under their health enduring power of attorney documentation?
Yeah, I think anything that you can give your power of attorney that helps them to understand, whether it be instructions about your well-being or whether it be instructions about where your assets are, is actually really helpful. So, for example, when my dad passed away, he had created this wonderful A4 file of all of his shares and where they were, all of his utility bills, where his phone provider was. So even though he and my mum shared a very close relationship and a lot of their things were joint, it was just this helpful guide when you're feeling a little bit overwhelmed around what is it that you need to do. And I think what a brilliant package that would be to give to your power of attorney to say, actually, if anything happens, here's a sort of A to Z of all the things that you might need to do or think about. Because a lot of the challenge for the attorney is actually finding out what's what and what's where and what needs to be done. So it's anything you can do to prepare and kind of give them a bit of a guide, I think, is much appreciated.
And when it comes to thinking about wills, we're going to introduce all that in a future program, so we're not talking about that today. But sometimes there are grey areas in advanced care planning because it's not quite got the status of a full legal document. I'm just a bit lost for words here. It's powerful in the hands of your GP or nurse practitioner. If you are consulting a health professional and you have given them a copy of your advanced care plan and then a decision has to be made about certain things, your advanced care plan may shed light on that decision, and they are obliged under the Health Practitioners Act to carry out your instructions that are contained in the advanced care plan. But that is a little bit different perhaps for the enduring power of attorney.
Yeah, so often when you're talking about very notable decisions about your healthcare, you're working with a team anyway because your attorney is not generally a registered nurse, doctor or health professional, and so they are ultimately making any final decision within a range. There are some things that are excluded based on the guidance of your medical team. So anything that you've given to your GP and others who are looking after you that kind of gives them a sense of what you're after helps to guide the recommendations they might make about your care to your attorney who's ultimately engaging in the decision making. So the attorneys play an important role in in advocating and making sure that the recommendations line up to what you might have wanted, but they often are not necessarily the only people involved in making those. One thing to think about in your enduring power of attorney is you may have multiple siblings or multiple children that you would like involved in the conversation, but who you don't want to give your attorney powers to. And so in your documents, you can name someone that you need to consult with or you need to inform around decisions. And what that gives you is the assurance that there are multiple sets of eyes or multiple sets of hands in a decision, and also that you don't create an uncomfortable family dynamic where one child or one sibling may be taking steps on your behalf or paying your bills or covering particular financial decisions and the other one's out of the loop. Because we do see the dynamics from families can be a little bit challenging where someone feels like mum or dad or whoever it may have been didn't trust them enough or didn't want them involved. It can create some challenging moments for siblings or children. So,
yes, I have been party to being a confidant of a matter where there's been considerable disagreement in the family and even erupting into violence. And it's just very distressing for everyone. And that carries on and it has wide ramifications, it impacts multi-generations in a family. So anything you can do to reduce conflict in the way you go about this process, I think it's got to be admirable, and it's got to be a win-win for everyone.
Yeah, absolutely. Look, I'm the youngest of three daughters, so Dad really lucked out there. He was hoping for a boy, it never happened. And my mum was very clear with us around, this is what I put in my power of attorney, this is how it will work, this is how each of you will be engaged in that, and are you to be consulted or are you to make the decisions? And so we're kind of going into it with eyes wide open, and I feel quite really pleased that she did that and really thankful, because what it means is that it's not going to be a surprise and B, an uncomfortable moment for any of us when and if we get to that point. So I think as much as you can do, think about the relationships, think about who you're putting where, think about having those other options in the documents around consulting and informed, and then just be eyes wide open with people about what you're thinking and how you've set it up, because it's really actually the best gift you can give to people is that sense of certainty when times have probably got a bit tricky anyway, because if you're needing to use your power of attorney, something's probably not either gone to plan or you're not in the best physical position that you might want to be. So,
and I think there are many shades of meaning and capacity come into play as you move into the twilight zone of requiring extra hands, eyes, ears, and a mouthpiece. It's like fluctuations from day to day can be quite extreme. So some days you can feel on top of the world and feel that you can tackle a lot of things, and other days you know you're not up for it. And this frees you when you realise, well, I have this kind of situation in hand because I have somebody who is going to play that role, and I can be relaxed and know that they are up for the job, that they have understood what I want, and that they have communicated already with family members, and they've already got everyone in the loop. Nobody's left out. Nobody's left wondering, why didn't they talk to me? Everyone is able to contribute their best. And I think if that's the scenario that you create and you set out to create that from the beginning, then from my perspective, I think it's a job well done.
Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of the discomfort that comes from talking about the future and talking about money and the twilight years, as you so beautifully put them, I think are things really that as an organisation we're trying to help people have those conversations earlier. A lot of the heartbreak that we see comes from when that hasn't happened or when there is disagreement and it really gets in the way of the care of that person. So anything we can do to try and have New Zealand talk more about their future, their later life, what they want to do, where they want to be, what that looks like, I think really helps to remove the barrier from people then getting to that stage of life and actually really loving it and having it be what they hope it to be. The medical landscape's getting a little bit more unique. I think the greatest human achievement we've got so far is actually aging, and I think that's to be celebrated, but with that comes a whole lot of other considerations. So thinking ahead, planning ahead, having conversations is just, it's one way to try and bring some certainty to something that you can't really control. And that always makes me feel a little bit more peaceful and a little bit more at ease, because I do like to have things under control myself. So having a plan helps.
And I think from my own experience, where I've been caregiving for a parent who was terminally ill, and she had chosen not to set up enduring power of attorney, she did recognise almost too late that actually it was something that she should have done, and it was something she regretted, and yet she thought she had done really well in terms of winding things up and planning things and so on. So I think it's something that some people are possibly a bit scared of. They don't want to hand that control over. They want to think that they're in charge for as long as possible. And actually, this is still being in charge. It's just making sure that your in-chargeness continues when you can't do it.
Well, so the flip side of the scenario is if you reach a point where a medical team deem that you need a hand with some of that decision-making and you haven't nominated someone or you don't have a power of attorney, it goes into the court system to appoint someone and you have absolutely no control over who that is. So the way I look at it is yes, at some point you may have to hand over control when someone deems that you need to, but equally I'd still rather name that person and have influence over what that person is thinking about when they're making my decisions than leaving it in the hand of someone else. Also, it costs a few thousand dollars often to go through that process, which compared to a few hundred and thinking about writing those documents, feels like kind of money well spent.
Yes, and on that note, we will end the session. Thank you very much for coming in, Catherine, and we look forward to the session on wills.
All good. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. And we'll be together again next week.
Thank you, Anne-Marie. If anyone wants to find out more, visit us at www.publictrust.co.nz or Google us to grab our 0800 number and give us a call.
Get together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6 or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus. And do note, Senior Focus is one word.